HTs, hotspots, and technicians, oh my. We dive into the world of HTs next on Live Free and Ham. Hello and welcome to Live Free and Ham. We are a bi-weekly podcast which explores ham radio topics in New Hampshire, New England, and beyond. Whether you're a regular listener or first-time guest, we're excited to have you here and we appreciate you guys supporting us. And thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. So let's get into today's show. I'm your host, Eric, call sign N1JUR, and I'm with my co-hosts,
Paul, KF4TPY,
and Todd, W1STJ.
All right. Well, before the show discussion, we always like to catch up and let our listeners know what's going on and where the crew's going to be. We are getting towards the end of this month, and of course, we are all out straight. But we're going to try to see if we can squeeze in our live stream this month. So make sure you take in and check out our socials and make sure you pay attention to our YouTube channel. And if you haven't subscribed, head on over there and do that, and you'll get notified when we go live. And as always, our favorite segment of every episode.
And now for something a little extra with Todd W1STJ.
All right. Well, this is, again, our little segment to help Todd get prepared for his extra. And so without further ado and me babbling on, over to our favorite quiz master, Paul, take it away.
All right, Todd. Today's questions are coming from the extra sub-element number 4. First question is, what is one type of electrical interference that might be caused by a nearby personal computer? Is it A clicking noise at intervals of a few seconds, B, a whining type of noise that continually pulses off and on, C, the appearance of unstable, modulated or unmodulated signals at specific frequencies, or D, Is it a loud AC hum in the audio output of your station receiver?
And the answer is
so. All right. Well, I need to get at least one right to beat last week's disaster. So
You do.
You got this.
All right. I do remember. I remember these questions during my studying, but I'm going to say,
let's all sit in. Let's energy, absorb the energy.
Okay. I'm going to say, I don't know if it, I can't remember. I'm going to say C.
Absorb the energy.
C is correct.
That's what I thought it was.
Yes, the appearance of unstable, modulated or unmodulated signals at specific frequencies.
Which could be so generic of an answer.
I know. You know, it's like I always second guess myself. So when I do these things, I'm like, oh, but it could be. But all right, let's go and see what the next one is.
All right, here you go. Question number 2. How should an antenna analyzer be connected when measuring an antenna resonance and feed point impedance? Do you A, connect the analyzer via high impedance transformer to the antenna? B, loosely couple the antenna and dummy load to the analyzer? C, connect the antenna feed line directly to the analyzer's connector? Or is it D, loosely couple the analyzer near the antenna base?
Now, is that one Ugga Dugga or is that two? I can't remember when they say loosely.
Yeah, loosely. That's what I love the loosely. I'm going to say, I'm going to go with C again. Connect the antenna feed line directly.
And you got it. Absolutely. No. Yes, you want to connect the feed line directly to the analyzer. All right, 2 for 2, Todd.
I hope so, because You've been out in the field how many times doing POTA activations? Hopefully you're not losing a couple of
years. If I got that one wrong, you know, you guys should just like kick me off the whole podcast. I'm out of here.
It's like, we're going to revoke your general. Can you do that?
revoke everything.
All fail.
All right. You ready for the third and final question?
Yeah.
Here we go. Which of the following choices is a good reason for selecting a high frequency for the design of an IF in a super heterodyne HF or VHF communications receiver? Is it A, for reduced drift? B, it's easier for front-end circuitry to eliminate image responses? C, fewer components in the receiver? Or is it D, improved receiver noise figure?
And the answer is...
That's a tough one.
I think I know this one. I'm going to say C, fewer components in the receiver.
It is B, easier for front-end circuitry to eliminate image responses.
Emotional, damn it.
That it is, but that is all right. Wow. I
two out of three ain't bad.
Not at all. I know. What's the saying, Todd? What's the saying? Because we're going to put it on our shirt. Meatloaf, something about meatloaf.
If you'd like the hint for the question, it's kindly provided here. And so two questions have front-end answers. If it has a dash in the middle, front dash end is the answer. No hyphen is not the answer.
Tricky, tricky, tricky.
Nice.
You're my boy. Thank you, sir.
I think we should. I think we should really. When was that? This was four. So yeah, maybe we should. Yeah, maybe we should just like work on like one through five until I'm like really nailing it, and then we'll move on.
In sub element one.
Yeah, well, five is a challenging one because five has to do with the Q and impedance and capacitance. Oh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd have to study that one before. All right. I'll study five for next week and see where we're at. But hey, two's better than three,
Yeah. Hey, you're doing better than last week, and the week before you're equally tied. So, hey, keep plugging away. And for those that have been following along, if you're working towards getting your upgrade, or maybe you're interested in getting your technician, definitely let us know. Hit us up via email at livefreeandham@gmail.com, and we'll be happy to share in your glory if you've gotten your ticket or your upgrade just recently. And with that, we'll keep plugging away, as I know Todd's going to keep working towards his extra. And so with that, let's kind of get into our usual. So, Paul, what's been going on in your ham radio week this week?
Well, so after talking with Todd after the recording last week, I realized that I had meant to purchase an MPPT solar charge controller, and I hadn't done it yet.
Ooh.
So I bought myself a solar charge controller, and the plan is to connect it in between my POTA solar panel, which is nice. It's that nice solar. It's real small, folds up to about 11 by 5.5 inches by like maybe just under 3 inches thick. But so the plan is then to have that solar panel feed the charge controller, so that I can run all of my 12-volt devices without overpowering anything.
Nice. And still charge your battery.
Yeah. And so I'm going to be making some USB power cords and putting power pole ends on the end.
Yeah. Now, it's funny thing is, like, I followed kind of the same route and where you're going, and I bought the Buddy Pole Mini. I have not yet taken it out of the box.
I have one too.
And at this point, I'm almost positive that I'm going to be putting it into another box that's going to include the battery. So, I bought a couple of solar panels. I bought a 100-watt one for the home at Harbor Freight when it was like on a good deal. And then I got the 60-watt BioEno one. And I have yet, you know, and again, because I don't do long activations, so I know that's your, you know, your bread and butter there, Paul. So definitely like power is a must there. So, you know, I will have to, you know, think that solo controller is, you know, that it, you just got to have one. That's the next step, especially whether you're going to go panels or not.
Yeah, well, the thing is the panels, they do really well, but they put out about 28 volts in full sunlight. And it's, I want to regulate it a little better. That's all.
Yeah.
So what, when the things are full charging, what is that? That controller will reduce the amount of energy going into whatever you're charging. Like the volts would, it'll reduce the volts.
Yeah. So it can, this charge controller can handle up to 50 amps. But it'll take the 28 from the solar panels. And it'll reduce it to a you know, a 13.8, 14 that the radio wants to see and everything else wants to see.
Okay.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, who makes that?
It's just a cheap Chinese little solar charge controller. I think it was
cool. You get Amazon
purchase? Yeah. $20.
Cool. All right. Well, hey, well, for those that are looking for a start, we'll make sure we get that link in the show notes there, and you can always check that out as well. Cool. All right. Well, anything else going on for your week?
Well, I appreciated the club, Granite State Amateur Radio Association, helping out the VFW with the Winter Carnival for Merrimack yesterday at the Wasserman Park. It was a great time, well attended by all, and I know there was more than a couple kids that enjoyed learning how to do their name in Morse code.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely a plus. And, you know, I'm glad, you know, you created that opportunity for the club to just get out there. And we met a lot of great, good, you know, people that were either interested in the hobby or had gotten their technician and had no idea what to do. And so, you know, I think we kind of opened that door a little bit more, and, you know, we'll see if, you know, they wander into the club. It'd be kind of cool.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, with that, over to you, Todd. How's your ham radio week been?
Yeah, not too happening. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Not ham radio enough.
Nah, not enough ham radio stuff. But I am looking forward to next week and the week after, because it looks like it's going to warm up. Tomorrow's going to be kind of crappy, but we're looking 50s, maybe even into the 60s. So I got my POTA gear all packed up and ready to go. I'll be throwing that in the car, and I get the opportunity. I got a couple parks. I have to do the, there's a park in Litchfield, New Hampshire that I haven't done. And it's kind of near where I'm always at. So, might do a lunch there. And then, I'd like to work on,
rail trail.
Get that kilo.
Yes. I got to get going on that. So I'm hoping that it'll be a little bit nicer, and we'll get one of these nice days. I mean, at this point, like today this morning, man, it was frigid. I don't know how early you guys got up, but I walked out that door at 6 o'clock. I was like, holy crap, is it cold? So like today I get out and it's like 35, 36 degrees. I feel like summer. I'm like, well, if this feels like summer, I'm like, God, 60s. I'm going to be like, I'm going to have to take some days off.
Yeah. I mean, you got some coming for you, so you might as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's going to be the plan for next week. Hopefully I'll get at least one activation in, maybe two. And then I looked at all into the first week of March. It's going to be super warm. It looks like a little rainy, though, with a lot of warm temperatures. But rain's never stopped me.
Better than snow.
Yes, absolutely. We've had a good – we can't complain, though. We have not had – the last couple of winters have been nothing. Oh, yeah. You know, we haven't had a good – you know, I mean, you guys know what it's like. We've had times where like snow a foot every day for like a week, you know, like we haven't had anything close to that. So, and it doesn't look like we're going to get much more now. It looks like we're going to be on a warming trend. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we know that, you know, it's been a sad couple of years because Paul has not had a single opportunity to go ice fishing whatsoever.
It's been brutal because usually, you know, like Christmas Eve is traditional. Like I go ice fishing on Christmas Eve, and then I come back and I get changed for the party and all that. But yeah, it's been probably 4 years where it's been like the middle of February before we get good ice.
Were you telling me, or someone was telling me, that the fishing tournament that they had to do it in one of the coves because the ice hasn't frozen yet?
Yeah. Well, so the annual, Meredith Rotary Derby. It always happens at the beginning of February. It's like the second weekend of February. And yeah, for the last couple of years, like they say, you know, Winnie is iced over, but, I mean, it's really not, it's super, super thin in the middle. You know, so yeah, most people stick to the coves, and then you get, you know, a whole lot of people on a small section of ice.
Yeah. Not enough fish. Cool. Well, hey, I did forget, and I just happened to notice our MacGyver over there is wearing our new hat that we just got out into our store. So if you are into camo and you love that kind of style of a flex fit hat, head on over to our website and check out the shop there. We've also brought back our our dipoles, verticals, and
beams.
Yeah, I forgot the last one. Beams, thank you. Beams, verticals, and dipoles, and bacon shirt. So that's up there on the store. So, you know, definitely head over there and check it out. We'd love to have you guys wear some official LFH stuff. And if we do, we'll definitely make sure, you know, we acknowledge you and, you know, we might have something special to throw back at you. So good on that. But yeah, I guess for me, since this week has been similar to kind of how you guys have, it's just been busy. Saturday, obviously, like Paul mentioned, was the club event. We spent a good amount of time, you know, there, trying to, you know, just drum up more interest in ham radio. And one of our favorite things, Tim, who's been on, was it episode 3 with us? He is a phenomenal CW guy, and just, you know, he'll stand on every soapbox he possibly can to let everybody know how great CW is. And I'm with him and supporting him. But he, you know, he dragged kids in. They didn't drag. I mean, he attracted kids in, yeah. And they were just like, I want to learn my name in CW and Morse code. I was like, what is Morse code? They don't know anything. They grew up with smartphones. I mean, so they just, you know, totally were, you know, attracted all that. And they were just super excited, and they're all wearing their name tags with, their, you know, name spelled out in Morse code. And so, yeah, that was always a big hit. And, you know, we just had a lot of people, new technicians, new people that were just interested and heard about it through, you know, some ads or marketing, and, you know, they wanted to find out more. So, you know, we're just planting seeds and keep moving on. So looking forward to what that kind of looks like. And then I guess for me, I mentioned a couple episodes back, I ended up frying my SD card in my ClearNode. I finally got that like last week. And so I'm hopefully going to get my ClearNode back in my truck so I can get back on All-Star and have that all set up. So I'm hoping on my channel I can get that video kind of finished up and out to folks so they can, you know, catch up on that. But outside of that, one other thing that kind of triggered me that's not really just related to my ham week, but if you haven't already and you've been over to our website, you know, we've been doing a Northeast ham radio kind of group, and a bunch of us guys all from the Northeast are all kind of just getting together once a month and, you know, doing either happy hour or, you know, talking about the latest, you know, POTA event or whatever the case. So, you know, make sure as you're kind of, you know, subscribing to all of our, you know, YouTubes and stuff like that, you keep an eye out for that and get notified on those. So we'd love to have your support, especially if you're from the Northeast and you know, you're looking to get more ham content. So outside of that, we're going to kind of dive into tonight's topic. One of the things that kind of came out of Saturday and some conversations that we've had offline is around HTs. You know, we all have kind of at one level or another purchase an HT, whether it was just a impulse buy or we were looking for our first radio. And so we wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit. We wanted to kind of share our input, and maybe you're, you know, a relatively new technician and you're listening to the podcast and you want to be able to, you know, go out and get your first, you know, real radio. We're going to share some of our experiences with, you know, what we have, what we've, you know, kind of fooled around with, hopefully give you some, you know, kind of concrete things you can take with you and head on down to, you know, the online, you know, Gigaparts or, you know, DX Engineering, or if you're lucky like us, head down to HRO here in the Northeast you know, pick up your next HT. So with that, you know, where can we kind of start with this? I figure let's get the biggest thing, the 100-pound gorilla out of the way here at this point, and Paul's smiling because he knows what a 100-pound gorilla I'm talking about. We all know Bao Fang. All of us love to hate and, you know, embrace it. You know, there we go. There is the official POTA, you know, stamped Bao Fang there. Everybody at some form or fashion has talked about the VX5R or whatever, or UVR or whatever. I don't even know the model numbers. It's kind of so crazy.
UV5R.
You know, maybe UV5R. Okay, there we go. So I guess with that, so Paul, talk to us a little bit about what led you to obviously get it. Was it solely on price? Was it just led by somebody's, you know, hey, I have one, you should get one kind of deal? And let's kind of go from there.
Well, so for me, so I got my license in February of 2021. And I'm on a fixed income. I don't have a lot of discretionary funds. So getting into this hobby, everything had to be very much budget-friendly. The Bao Fang happens to fit that bill. At the time, the UV5R was about $26. So I bought one of those. came with the cable and everything, programmed it with Chirp. And, it's nice that Chirp like interfaces with Repeater Book and everything else, it just makes it nice and easy. But as I discovered, is there's more than just 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Well,
yes,
Bao Fang happens to make a 5X3 as the model of the radio. Ooh. And it's a tri-band. And so it does 2 meters, 220, and 440. And so I sold my, or gave away my UV5R, and I've since bought three of the of the 5X3. And I programmed in all the local repeaters and everything. I got one of them. It's clipped onto the speaker next to my recliner. And then it's got a little SMA to SO239 adapter. And then I've got coax running out to a little a mag mount antenna on a cookie sheet on the roof. And that's, you know, that's, wow, that's my, you know, if I want to listen to, you know, the fire department or the local repeaters while I'm sitting there watching TV, I just put that on. And it's nice and convenient because it's next to my chair and it's got the boom mic or the mic on the cord.
What's like kind of like, obviously it sounded like you touched upon a little bit with the programmer Chirp. It sounds like from a learning curve perspective, the Bao Fang sounds to be easy enough to be able to program and get set up and configured, or like, is it what's the attraction?
Oh, 100%. Like, I mean, one, it was really affordable. Two, it was easy to program, and it got me on the air quick. With a little bit of money out of my pocket, it got me into all the local repeaters. Of course, for whatever reason, I sit, my house is kind of down in a hole. And so hitting the Bedford repeater is one of the harder repeaters for me to hit. but it was a really good entryway into HTs. And for those that don't know, HT stands for handy talkie. I always think that's funny. Handy talkie. But yeah, so
kind of ridiculous what they call.
Then I went to DMR, but I'll let you continue with where you want to go.
We'll touch upon a little bit of the digital stuff and whatnot in a bit. But I think one of the things I came into the hobby myself, and I know Todd, before I kind of dive into my story, you don't have any Bao Fangs or any early entry level kind of radio stuff at all, no?
Well, I have an entry-level radio, my first radio, but I didn't go the Bao Fang route. I started when I was studying for my technician. I had a little Bearcat analog scanner, and that's how I got our repeater. Okay. And I would listen to that every night, wondering if I'd ever get on. And, you know, we've already talked about that story about my first time and John yelled at me because he couldn't. And then I did the same thing you did. I went and the HT wasn't working. Bedford was hard to get. So I I had a metal roof at the time, and I just threw my magnet on the roof, and it was, instead of being vertical, it was kind of sitting at an angle shooting out, and it worked. So I was like, good. Stuck it right out the window. Like my desk was right there, and I opened the window and plopped it on there, and it worked. So
nice.
But yeah, that's how I got it. But the radio that I got was, it was a Yaesu FT70D.
Oh, which okay. is not too bad. I mean, that's what, going for like $100 or $150 now.
Yeah,
or something like that?
Yeah. So when I got it, it was $150. It was on sale, and I didn't know what the difference between analog and digital. I just figured, oh, if it's digital, it must be better. Mm. So I got it, right? Because I didn't know there was different digitals or anything. I just knew that this one did both, and Baofeng didn't, and so I got it. And that was going to be my radio, because I wasn't really planning on getting into ham radio. It was more of a, I'm going to get on the net with this thing and be done with it. And I love it. It actually works good. And, you know, when we start talking about the digital, this little radio, I was able to go on the Goffstown repeater and go digital and then change from the Wolfpack to the AmericaLink or whatever they called. AmericaLink, and on this repeat, on this little radio with a mag mount on my car, I talked to Carlos.
Was that the one you used in your car? Or was that your FT3 when you were talking normally? In
this,
you
know, was the one.
That was that one. Okay,
this was the one. Yeah, and it was awesome because, you know, those of you who don't know Carlos, he likes to think his YouTube channel is Terminal Mobile. Or yep, terminal velocity, and he bails out of airplanes and makes contacts. So it's pretty cool.
On purpose. On
purpose. So yeah, so we had our first conversation on that, and it was on, like, I think it was on America's Link, or it was pretty cool. And I didn't even, and then I got nervous. I'm like, oh my god, I just changed the repeater, and you know it's supposed to be on Wolfpack, and then I found out later that it actually will go back if no one's using it. It's like, I'm gonna get in trouble.
That's actually something we want to segue to turns, because in a conversation we had, people like have that mic fright stuff, and, you know, are they going to break something, and they don't want to be the cause of, you know, the, you know, an AT&T outage where you pull a cable out and all of a sudden the whole entire internet goes away type thing. But yeah, so all right, cool. So from a standpoint, I think, so we've got some base radios. And so my little kind of story is I go way back. My license I got back in 91 when I was in high school, and the radios weren't like as sophisticated as they are now. And my radio was like stood probably about, it was from end of battery to before the antenna was attached. It was almost 16 inches long. I mean, this thing was like, you'd wear it on your belt with a belt to be able to hold the, you know, the radio on, because it had maybe 2.5 hours of battery life total if you actually used it. It was Yaesu's first dual band. And the story that kind of goes with it, I won't get into, because I got rewarded for burning down my kitchen, and that's how I was rewarded for it. But we won't talk about that some other time later. And so all that was, is that was kind of my first, but that was the first true dual band analog radio. And just as we all kind of learn when we look at Baofengs or any of radios for the first time, if we don't read or the instructions or whatever, all of the buttons look gibberish, and you just kind of go, okay, I'm just going to do the basic stuff here and program, you know, my radio for, you know, one repeater. And that's where it sat. But so with that, I kind of came into the hobby in early 2020 and 2021. To get back into it, and all the radios had changed, and, you know, I was hearing about Baofengs and TYTs and all of those other radio oddity type things, because YouTube was, you know, littered with all of you know, YouTubers doing reviews and stuff like that. But I kind of decided that, you know, I was going to spend a little bit more money on, you know, trying to get my first HT, and so I guess kind of my first thought was, is that, you know, you spend money on buying an HT, and Paul, obviously, you know, and Todd, you guys all have your own, like, did you realize pretty quickly that once you had the HT, it being here in the lovely, you know, New England area, that small little rubber duck antenna was just pretty much, you know, garbage or hot, you know, hot trash.
Instantly. Oh, yeah. Right off the bat, when I got yelled at by our VP of our club,
yep.
Before I knew him, it's a big joke I have with him. But yeah, they're not really, the ones that they come with, in my opinion, they're pretty much junk. Yeah. Another type of antenna to add to it works well. I have used I've used different kinds of antennas, like, you know, the mag mounts. I think I had a Hustler mag mount antenna. I think I had that I used for 2 meters, 440. And, but one of the things that I did do that was pretty amazing with my other HD, which they don't make anymore, but it's the FT3D, right. FT3D, which is the first version of the, what, 5 now?
5D? Five now, yep. Yep.
All right. Pretty much the same thing. I don't know. There's something about parts or something, but I mean, it's a great little HT. I love it. It has a lot of options to it. It's a little bit more high tech. You can use it as a node. You can use it as hook onto wires, Zach. You can do all this kind of stuff. But what I had done is I had gone to the Cape, and I had just gotten our Ed Fong antenna, and I had the one in the that you put in the, what do you call it, in the PCP pipe, and I brought it to the Cape, and I set it up on a little tripod on the deck, and I'd go out there and I'd find some nets to listen to, and there's a net that was on every night during the week, and they were 60 miles away, and I was getting them on this Ed Fong antenna sitting on the deck at the Cape in Dennis, and they were shocked that I was on an HT using this Ed Fong antenna connected to it. So I had the Ed Fong antenna, I had a cord, and then the cord went into where the antenna jack was, and I was connected to that antenna. So I was like mobile on the deck, but like I couldn't just walk around with it. But it worked unbelievable. So you're looking at 5 watts, I'm 60 miles away, hitting this repeater with this antenna, and they were just shocked. And this group of guys, I was kind of like, I told them I was on vacation, and I, you know, they were like a local group that just kind of got on. So they kept inviting me back, and they didn't know anything about the Ed Fong antenna. So I gave them the whole rundown. They're like, well, what kind of, I'm like, nothing. It's in a PVC pipe. And they're like, what? And I sent them the website. I go, you got to check this thing out. So who knows? Maybe there's a whole bunch of Ed Fong antennas now because of me down at the Cape. But that was a cool experience because, you know, I wasn't even, I mean, this was a 5 watts, and I had just brought it down there just to see what I could do. And this was before I was a general. So I was really just focusing on the 2 meter 440 stuff. So it was pretty cool experience, but antennas do make a big difference. You know, I think it's probably the most important part of a ham radio setup. Like you can have the best equipment, but if you don't have a good antenna,
right,
or an antenna that's making out, you know, doesn't matter what you have, like what you're talking into,
the big paperweight.
Yeah.
So how's your
experience? I switched all my Baofengs over to the Nagoya. It's a tri-band. NA320A. So it does the VHF 220 and UHF. But I also got a couple of Abri tactical antennas.
How do you like those? Those are the little
for as cheesy as they sound, they actually do work, you know. And they work well. I've also got I've got a stealth antenna that's woven into the back of my armor plate carrier through the MOLLE. And then I've got a Baofeng on the armor plate carrier as well.
Well, it's a funny thing. We forgot to touch this on a Baofeng side of thing. Like the attractiveness obviously is the price, but the one thing that I would do is like, I have the most, I'm notoriously known for like destroying radios, cell phones. Remember, you carry everything on a belt clip. You know, for some reason, my hips know how to find door jams and things that it shouldn't be. When I don't have something on my hip, they're perfectly fine. But when I have a radio on there, I'm guaranteed to break a clip. I'm guaranteed to break an antenna. There's always like, or, you know, I whack it in a certain way and all of a sudden the lock on, you know, gauges, and now I'm transmitting on 5.2 instead of some other, you know, other channel. And, you know, so I love the fact that cheaper radios are out there for the biggest purpose of like, you could beat them up. And it's like, you don't have like the care in the world that you're going to ruin it, because you know, you can go buy another $30, you know, Baofeng, and you'll be good and everything. Well, I'm sure I'm saying Baofeng wrong too. I'm sure there are people yelling at the, you know, radio right now, but hey, well, I'm going to say it the way I say it, and that's just the way it goes. But yeah, so that's, I think, a good attraction point. And so let's kind of talk about like what other stuff besides the, obviously the 100-pound gorilla Baofeng that's out there that we know that kind of falls in that price point, that we want to steer somebody who like maybe is a new technician that's looking for radios, but let's try to keep them away from the stuff that's like on the bleeding edge of like being, you know, spurious emissions and all of the other stuff. What do you guys got?
Well, so Eric, that brings me to yesterday, right? So when we were at the park together, now the there's that big hill, mm-hmm. right? And we were kind of on the side of the hill. And so we're completely blocked in mm-hmm. one direction. But we should have had a fairly decent shot at the Bedford repeater, right?
Yeah.
But with my Baofeng, even with the Nagoya antenna, I was able to receive much more broken up than what you were able to receive. You were able to receive much clearer. And
yeah, it was like,
yeah. So I think, that you have to factor in sometimes that the manufacturer of the radio actually does matter a bit. But you were telling me that the radio that you had wasn't all that expensive. Which radio was that?
No. So that was, again, this falls into kind of what we'll all deem as the sub $100 radios. I mean, this was an FT65. I mean, all for all intents and purposes, let me grab it. It's a pretty small, unobtrusive design, you know, similar to how, you know, the Baofengs are, say that right, I guess. And, you know, it's a dual band, you know, obviously single VFO, and I've got a diamond antenna. Oh, no, is this a diamond? Yeah, it's a diamond RH77 on it, because the little original one that came with it's probably no bigger than 8 inches, you know, tall. But it's like that same, you know, design that I was telling you with the Baofengs. Like, you can beat them up. This one, you know, I could just throw over in the corner. I'm not worried about it, you know, basically hitting the ground and exploding or doing anything, because it's rugged enough that I can, you know, easily, you know, not worry about it getting hit or beat up or scuffed.
When you're
not
worried about the cost of replacement either.
Yeah, true. Right. That's a big thing.
I think, you know, I think like Baofengs, like I know that we get a lot of kids. Like, I've talked to kids on repeaters that have just graduated, or they're in high school. They don't have jobs. They don't have a lot of money. They're kind of like at the beckon of their parents of what they're going to get. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think like for someone like that, a young kid just got his license, really excited. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a Baofeng. I mean, you're going to, if you plug it in and maybe you get a mag mount antenna or something, or you upgrade to like the diamond antenna. I mean, I have that diamond antenna on my FT3D, and then I have this
signal stick.
I think this is a signal stick.
Oh yes. Signal stuff.
Yeah. Nice. Right? This thing works good. This is a great antenna. The one thing, it's just longer, but it's a good little, yeah,
awesome. Hold it up to the video, Todd, yeah. Just so everybody can see how long it is. Yeah, it's pretty long.
And like, it's pretty, right?
It's good for you know, like threatening children.
It's a little bit for those that don't know. Diamond, right?
Signal stick is primarily the one responsible for hamstudy.org. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So hamstudy.org really wouldn't be possible without Signal stick.
Yeah, I think that's where I bought it from, or I think it's where I heard about it or something. So I figured I'd try it out, and I love it. It's great. So, but what I'm saying is, if you're really like, if you're in a situation when you can't buy it, and like Baofeng's, like we have a guy in our club that he's got like 30 or 40 of them. He just keeps buying them. Like a new one comes out and he buys it and he brings it in and shows us. They've got larger ones, smaller ones. I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome. But they work, you know, they'll get you on the air. They may not be as great as like a high end one, but on the other hand, like, what do you use a HT for anyway?
Yeah, I mean, there we go.
Right. Like in the beginning, I thought like I didn't think there was a difference between a base station and HT, because, you know, I didn't know you guys and I didn't know anyone in the ham field. So I just thought any radio was the same. So, but obviously it doesn't have the wattage. It doesn't have the power to go as far, but we use it. What? We go to ham conventions, Near Fest. Everyone's got their HT. You can talk to people. We use it when we're doing field day, that kind of stuff, you know? So it's kind of cool. Like I think it would be kind of cool. Like if you were like two young kids and, you know, someone in your neighborhood, you could do, straight line of sight, you know, that would be kind of cool. Cause you know, it's going to work better than, you know, the radios you get on Amazon for what do they call Walmart, those?
Yeah,
like you're going to get like maybe down the block, like this one, you might get a couple miles. So, I mean, there's definitely uses for them, but it's not going to be, I think if you have one and you start using repeaters and stuff, like when I was in the car, you know, I would get, and then I remember Eric, you're telling me what you got to get one in your car. You got to get a mobile radio in your car. And then when I got that, I was like, holy crap, like, wow, like what a difference this makes. Yeah. And I even had the mag mount on the roof and it still was like kind of staticky or whatever. So, you know, but look, at everyone has – every ham must have an HT at some point, and I'm sure they all have one sitting around. Maybe they don't use it. I don't use mine that often, but I am going to use mine when I sit down and finally program my radio to do cross-brand repeat, because I'm going to be upstairs watching a show or watching the game, and, it's time for the net. So what I got to do now is either pause my show or go down to the shack, right? Well, if I can sit there and be out on the deck, you know, be out by the pool, be at the bonfire around my property, I have the HT, I can connect to it anyway. So that's another cool option.
About like, what do we use HTs for, right? For people that are like myself that are all about being outdoors and also planning and preparing for God knows what, HTs serve a separate function there, right? Where and I'm learning that the Baofeng really doesn't add up to what it should for what it's being promoted, at least in the, like the prepper community, because it doesn't perform as well as we would want it to. But you know, like I'm planning this year to do a whole bunch of different summits, and I want to make sure that the HT that I've got on me is going to do as best as it can while I'm hiking, and then once I reach the summit, you know. So the experience yesterday with just comparing my radio and Eric's side by side, it was clear to me that the Baofeng just, while yes, it's great, it's cheap, it just doesn't perform as well as what I really want it to. And so that's my reason for looking at other HTs and upgrading.
Yeah, someone had told me that Baofeng makes radios and has the customer do the testing when you pay for the right. And then they go by that, and then they fix it, and then, you know, the Yaesus and the Icons and stuff, they actually do their own testing and build their products. So, you know, you're kind of like a guinea pig.
Yeah, that I would say that's pretty true.
But I'm not into like taking things apart, but like I know there's a lot of kids out there, you know, that I deal with kids in my work, and some of these kids are like really into tinkering and taking things apart and stuff. I mean, like, am I going to give my kid a $300 HT and say, hey, you can go mess with this? Or am I going to go buy him a bunch of Baofengs and say, go to town, do whatever you want with it, figure it out how it works, improve it, you know? Another good point of having a $25, $30 radio. I mean, it's $30, you know. It costs more to go to Starbucks than you bring the family to Starbucks, you might as well give them a Baofeng, because it costs about the same.
There are a couple of them at that point, if you get a good deal. Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, so if I can kind of summarize this a little bit to someone who's kind of just listening, and you're like, well, you bounce around to every whole bunch of different things. I think if you're looking into getting into the hobby and you've got your technician, and the first thing you obviously saw on Amazon was the Baofeng pop-up or a TYT or a Chinese, you know, flavor radio from Radio Oddity comes up. All of those are going to have like that sub $100 price range. They are going to do what they advertise, which is and may not do it really well, like Paul mentioned, but they'll get you on the air. They'll be, you know, good enough to be able to get you going. However, you're going to find out, like we all just talked about, is that you're going to feel like once you finally get into it, it's going to come up short on you. So, you know, that kind of bumps you up to the next stage, which is you either go one or two routes, which is you buy another HT, which again is not a bad thing, but in essence, your price point changes, or you do the mobile route. And we'll talk about mobile some other time, because that's a whole, you know, kit and caboodle that we don't have time to talk about here. And we're really focused on HTs. So, you know, you've got, you know, that next tier, but that next tier brings a whole level of other stuff involved with it. So let's kind of talk about that next tier. And that's, so I'm talking about like the radios, like Paul mentioned earlier, the DMR style, the digital components. They have a little bit more features built into them for both power and ruggedness. And at the same time, they also offer, you know, in some cases, dual band capability. So, you know, you can have multiple bands, you know, 70 meters, you know, 2 meters, sometimes 220. Where in your minds and kind of what you guys have played around with, what kind of falls in that? And Todd, you did talk on some of the ones you have there. What you know, can you shed some light, you know, on your Yaesu stuff that you got there, and you know what you liked about the three besides the fact that it just had more bells and whistles, or was that just what sold you on it?
Yeah, I mean, the three is, it's got all the bells and whistles. It's got dual. You can be right. It does have dual, doesn't it? You can monitor both bands. You can monitor two frequencies at once, say. But the digital for me was, I was able to get on to the Wolfpack repeater, which is based out of Goffs. It's on the Goffstown repeater, and it's a fusion repeater. And they do a digital net, so I was on them. And but I also learned by reading the directions that you can actually use the radios to switch the repeater to rooms. The different
modes,
the different rooms, right? Is that what they call it? Rooms. Mm-hmm. And you know, America's Link is a huge room, and you could get on that, and then you could listen. Now I can hit that Goffstown repeater from any HT. I mean, it's not very hard. It's up on a mountain, and it works well. But you know, do you need that? I mean, if you wanted to get on that thing, yeah, you did. I don't do a lot of. I used to do more when I was on the Wolfpack all the time. I just don't have time to get on it. They're always on. I think they're on Fridays at 8, and it's a great net. It's a great net. And then they actually have another one, I think, on Sundays at 3. They do a system fusion net, which is kind of which is good. So, but that's the only time I've ever really used digital. And then, you know, Eric and I have used it once when we were on the Bedford repeater trying to. We're starting to get scratchy. Switch over to digital so we can continue the conversation. But, you know, it's just another option. You know, I think most repeaters are using analog. I mean, I know there's one, what is it called? There's one up there that they're always coming. I just scan them and it always comes up as they're always talking on digital on it. It does both. But most people talk on digital on that. So, I mean, but we're in New England. I think Yaesu and Fusion is more popular than another place you might live. Like, I think if you go down south, Fusion isn't really existent, right? I mean, it is, but it's not as popular. Smaller population
possible.
Right. So, I mean, I think it also depends on where you live and what you want to do. And, you know, I think we're going to talk a little bit about like nodes and stuff. And I'm sure we're going to have a podcast because I think I'm going to buy all that stuff and do that live on the air, and you guys can see how dumb I really am when it comes to radios.
T-shirts coming soon.
Huh? Yeah.
T-shirts coming soon.
Yeah. But you know, I think, you know, it's really what people, I mean, and part of ham radio for me is about exploring and learning about it. Like I didn't know anything about any, I didn't know about POTA. I mean, if I didn't meet Eric, I would have known what POTA was. I mean, I probably would have down the road, but Eric was the one that shoved it in my face. Was like, you got to try this. You got to do this. And I mean, literally, hey, you got your general. Let's go get some lunch. Want to go activate a park? Like, it was that quick. And I was hooked. So that was a really, you know, something I didn't expect to have happen. And, you know, getting on the air. And like I said, I was just going to do the HT thing, get on the net every night, say hi to people, meet some people, and be done with it. But another thing you could use Baofengs for, let's say you got like a family of five and you guys want to go camping and they're all like, they all got their tech licenses, right? You got your kids have it, your wife, everyone got, you guys go out and buy a bunch of Baofengs and you're camping. You can keep track of the kids and, you know, for cheap money. Right. If you had to buy everyone in the family a $100 radio, you're looking at $500 or $100. You can get the whole family one. So I guess it's relative to what you want to do and what your needs are. As Ryan, our other co-host, you know, he says buy once.
Buy once, cry once.
I think with HTs, it's a little different because you're not breaking the bank totally, even on a top end one. Well, some of them now are getting kind of expensive. Yeah. Like, what is the five? Is the five like someone said it was like $600 or something?
No, the five's dropped a little bit, but like the latest ones, the G75s that's out, that's almost just creeping up to $700 for a small HT.
Yeah. Like me personally, I would not advise you spend the money on that. There are better radios that you could get. You know, base, you know, mobile radios that would be much better for your advantage. If you have that kind of money to spend on an HT, you can get a different radio that would do you much more.
Yeah. Well, so my progression from the Baofeng was into DMR, and DMR was it was a natural progression because I bought a Yaesu mobile radio, and so then if I wanted to do Fusion, I had the option to do Fusion in the mobile, but DMR was interesting to me. And there are several DMR repeaters around the state. The closest one being in Hudson, but it opened my mind to hotspots and like getting a hotspot and program the hotspot and then programming the radio to work with the hotspot. And fortunately there was a great Elmer online that helped me out. He gave me my first code plug and he explained how code plugs work.
Let's not get into that one. But actually, so good segue actually before you kind of get into that. So just for our audience that may not know, what's a hotspot?
Is when either you buy a pre-made hotspot, like an OpenSpot or one of those, or you take a Raspberry Pi and you put an MMDVM hat on it. It's a multi-mode digital voice modulator, and that allows the Raspberry Pi to then communicate with your radio. And so you can use any number of different softwares. I'm using Pi Star. There's a new version of the Pi Star. It's a WSPD, I believe, if I could read it right.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a much better interface. It's a much better web interface. But the great thing about getting into some of the digital modes with hotspots is there's a lot of interconnected repeaters, and so my first introduction to that was when I was down in Florida vacationing, and I brought the Baofeng. You know, and that's all I had was just, that's all I brought was just a Baofeng. But I pulled up repeater book on my phone and I said, okay, well, there's three repeaters that I should be able to hit from the second floor of this resort. And I was able to get through to one. And I was really surprised that when the person on the other end that answered came back and they said, well, I'm coming to you from New Mexico. And I said, well, how is that possible? I'm in Florida. And they said, well, you're talking on a repeater that's connected to the East Coast reflector system. And so all these repeaters are linked via All-Star. And so even though you're connecting to the repeater via analog, it's being converted and being sent over the internet to all these other repeaters. And so it's truly RF to RF, even though there's an internet link in between. But it's just, you know, it's just one of those modes that once you start going down that rabbit hole, I mean, there's a lot you can get into.
Yeah.
And I mean,
go ahead, Todd.
No, there are guys like on the, that do the Wolfpack Net that like, that's like their whole thing with ham radio is they get on all these digital modes and talk like all over the world, you know, with these reflectors and rooms, and there's meetups, and you know when I say meetups, like nets that they do that people get all over. I mean, we have two regulars on that net. I think they're originally from like New Jersey, but I think they live in Minnesota, and they're on every Friday, and they're like the regulars, but they get on through like what you're saying, you know, Yesu's version XLX, is what
Fusion.
What they call it? Yeah, Fusion, and then there's
XLX. Yeah, and
there's the X something.
Wires X.
So so they do the same kind of thing, and that allows them to connect to the Wolfpack through, you know, the node and stuff. So, you know, there's all the, I think that's really, really awesome. And then one time on the Wolfpack net, and I happened to be on there, a guy from Yesu, from the company, joined the net from Japan, you know, through the node to get the Wolfpack network. So it was pretty awesome to hear a guy from Japan, and, you know, who worked for Yesu on the system, talking to us on the net was pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty daring.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, it was cool that, you know, this kind of technology makes it so you can, you can talk around the world, and you can still be a technician, right? Like, if you're a technician and you really want to do DX, kind of, if you want to call it that, you know, you can talk around the world if you get on these nodes and get on these digital modes. And I think it's good. I mean, the one thing that I think is concerning is, like, you have to have the internet connection, right? So if the internet died, you know, then you're kind of like shit out of luck. Mm-hmm. But where at least on HF, like, if the internet dies, you know, you can still
reach. Hop along, right?
Yeah. So it's, I mean, but I think it's ham radio. I mean, look at, I used, what's the app that we used when we had it connected to our repeater?
Echolink.
I used Echolink to check into our net when I was down in the Virgin Islands. So, I mean, I don't know. That's an app on a phone. And when I first got Echolink, I was just going around. I ended up talking to a guy in Arizona because I had been there a few times, and the guy owned the repeater, and he was just shocked that I was calling him from Echo. Like, I was calling, but I was using Echolink, and he was just like, and we talked for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, like almost every day. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do, but I like the idea that there's so many options, and that we can talk to whoever we need to talk to. And you might like doing all the DMR or the digital stuff on the 2 meter 440, and someone else might like the HF stuff. And it really doesn't matter, because it's all ham radio.
Yeah. So I think, you know, and I don't want to keep people's heads spinning, especially if you're brand new listening to this, and we apologize in advance, but I think, kind of just in a nutshell, to summarize some of this, digital modes, and whether we talk hotspots or using repeaters that have digital enabled on them, is pretty much another show that we should dedicate talking about and getting into the details. And obviously Todd kind of alluded that we should do a live, setup of All-Star, which is another kind of digital mode with analog.
That might have to be a multi-live show or multiple hours. I can't imagine it's going to go easy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the clear note is pretty straightforward out of the box. It's just a lot of configuration stuff. But all that being said is that I think, you know, if you're looking for that radio, that is something you want to consider maybe in terms of mode. And as we all kind of brushed into, was that, you know, depending on where you live, and if you're in the Northeast, you know, we have concentrations of DMR, we have concentration of All-Star, we have concentration of Fusion, and all of that other stuff. So it's just really kind of what's localized to you. And when you're, you know, if you start to get a radio and you go out and buy, you know, start at the, you know, 100 sub-level radios, you know, listen to the repeaters that you can reach and talk to them a little bit, or at least listen to see what the talk is and what modes and whatnot. And then you'll find out pretty quickly, or use things like Repeater Book to kind of see what the concentration is in your area of types of modes and whether it's digital and or analog. And then that'll kind of dictate where your price point for radios fall into. But so let's kind of play a little game, because I think we should all spend some time later. Obviously, as like I said, another episode talking about digital, because there's a lot to it, and it you know, we can definitely get into a lot of rat holes with that. But so if I was to kind of, buy, and we'll do this in terms of, the three tiers. So if you're going to go out and you're going to recommend, let's do this kind of say on your own level. So we're going to start with, pick your three, and we'll start at the low end. So we're going to go around in the group here, and you're going to tell me what your low end radio is. You're going to start sub 100, and then we'll, bump the price point up to, the mid tier, which will shoot between, 100 and, 400, and then 400 to ridiculous, gobs of money. Go ahead, Paul, you start us off first. For the sub 100 radios, what would you recommend, or what would you buy yourself?
I really feel like we need W1 WRA in here for this, but
right.
So, I mean, as far as the Baofengs go, I can't say enough for the simplicity of the 5X3. I think at this point they about doubled in price. They're about $60 now, but even still, it's an affordable radio. Once you start getting, where you want to do something else, the Radiodity GD77, that's a fantastic radio. It's analog, but it also does DMR. And if you get into hotspots, like you can do crossover modes with DMR and everything else.
Question with that is that the QRZ1 that Gigaparts is actually selling to new hams? Is that also the rebranded radio? Is that the same radio?
I think it's a TYT branded radio. This one just says Radiodity on it, but
okay.
I don't think it's the GD77. Right. The GD77 is a little bit older. I think it's a GD78 that they're pushing now, but there's really no difference between the two.
Just a nicer case, I guess. Newer colors, whatever it is. Okay, cool. All right. So you're recommending Baofengs or TYTs or, Radiodity kind of brand. So what are you about, sub 100, Todd?
Well, I don't have one that's sub 100. I would agree with Paul.
Yeah, same thing.
If I was going to, I would probably do like the TYT or the Radiology over a Baofeng. I think you'd get a little bit better quality radio and. Wosong. Yeah. Right. Yep. That's what I would go. I mean, I'm not against Baofengs. I just, I don't have one. I don't need one. And like I said, I mean, if Zach became a technician and he wanted an HD, I'd buy him a Baofeng.
Okay.
Yeah, he's 10. Cool. Because he leaves his shit everywhere. And, if he left it in the grass and we got a flood or snow and it blew up or whatever, it's $30, right?
Okay. Well, so then I'll throw mine in the ring because nobody mentioned it. It's the FT65 that I just chucked over here on the floor. That radio, when my dad got his ticket, that was the first radio I bought him. And at that point, that was like less than $65 when I went out. And, it does require a programming cable, because the menuing system, you can go through it. It's a good, strong, well-built radio. If you not worried about it being beat up, it kind of falls in that same genre as like the Baofengs and stuff like that, but you're going to get a better receiver, better transmitter. You're going to get better quality parts, stuff that, that's been developed well. So my suggestion for most people would be that would be the best radio, for sub 100s. So, all right. So let's kind of shift the lever up a little bit. So you're now kind of getting into your, $200 to $500 radios. Any recommendations that you guys have either purchased or you'd throw into the ring that you'd want, and, what one specific feature kind of highlights, one over the other?
Well, I'm going to say the FT70D.
Okay.
This radio was my first radio. I don't regret buying it. It does fusion, does analog. It's dual band. It's really rugged. It's kind of like
Is that the one that has the IPv7 rating or 5 rating, the water rating? It can.
I forget what it has, but it's pretty rugged. I mean, you can toss this thing around. It's not going to break. But it doesn't have the color screen, and you know, it looks kind of, I mean, it's got some lights in there. It'll change colors, but for a good quality radio from a good quality company that does research, you know, doesn't have the customer research.
Yes, the QA people.
But you know, and it's been around a while, and it just works. I mean, so you know, this was $150. It was my first radio, and I was pretty excited. It's solid. It doesn't look cheap. It's got good plastic. It doesn't look like it's like put together by like if you drop it, it doesn't look like it's going to break apart. Mm-hmm. So you know, that would be my choice for if you're looking in that range. That's me.
Well, so okay. I've yet to purchase an AT-AHT in that price range, but I have been looking, and as a proud member of Team ICOM, I've been looking at like the ID50 and some of those other on the used market where they're sub 250 range. But it's not to say that I'm anti Yaesu. I'm not anti Yaesu. So if a Yaesu great deal popped in front of me, I would jump on it.
Okay. All right. Good call there. I thought it makes a really, really good radio, so I'm with you on that. I still kind of lean on the Yaesu camp just because, again, the ruggedness and the functionality features. And I would, in that next price tier, this one kind of fits really good because it's a tri-band radio. So this is the step up to the old VX5R, which is this one, which, if you look at the size difference, it's like super small in terms of its, size. And if you're, in the 40 to 55 age bracket, you're going to have to a thicker pair of glasses to be able to see the displays on this. This is no longer made, but the same goes with the VX6R, which is kind of the replacement to this radio. It's tri-band. So you get 2 meter, 440 and 220. So if you have some, concentration of 220 machines in your area, that might be a good option. I'm almost positive it does not do any of the digital modes. So I'm still kind of staying on that analog side of things. Really good, rugged. This one actually, I think, has the IPv6 rating. So it is, water resistant. So you could drop it in a, bucket for whatever the, rating states it can. Not that I'm asking, or suggesting you should do that. Although there was a video, I think K-Murder put out that he didn't actually release that he made mention that he was throwing radios into pools for, the IPv7 rating test. That would be my throw into the ring. All right. Okay. So the last tier. Yeah. All right. I can only imagine what that one would look like. Sorry, Mr. K-Murder. We can't honor that radio for you. All right. So the last one's kind of like the dream segment, I think, because a lot of us would love to buy these radios, but a lot of times just kind of go, do I really need another HT when you buy it to this level? But there's usually some feature or functionality that kind of pulls you towards you. So, start off with you, Paul. What, where in that 500 and, through the...
Well, for me personally, I just can't justify it. For $500,
sure.
I could get another base station. I could get another POTA radio. I could get a backup to a backup. I could get a whole number of different things.
You could get a whole lot of Baofengs for $500.
If one was to fall magically off the back of a truck, what would it be and how would you,
I guess I'd have to say probably whatever the latest and greatest ICOM HT is. The D75.
Okay, so that's the 75. Yeah, the D75. Okay. That's a good radio. Yeah. That one has, a lot of features. What kind of attracts you to any specific feature in there? I mean, obviously it's a big, APRS device and, so forth and so on, but anything in there?
The overall functionality of it. I believe if I remember right, it's got a nice full color display. you know, which is it's a nice upgrade to the cheaper radios, not having, you know, a full color display.
Okay. Well, although you have the ID50 though, and that's got a lot of the same functionality as, say, the 57.
Yeah, well, that's so. Like I said, the ID50 is definitely like at top of my list currently. But
okay, yeah, the 52, I think, is that color display, the APRS functionality with it's got a built-on digipeater and, you know, a bunch of other things that you know the must-haves, the creme de la creme of great radios and functionality. I think, yeah, that is definitely a one I would put in my belt too as well if I had the money. How about you, Todd?
So I'm going to say they don't make it anymore, but either the 3D, FT3D or the 5D. It's got a touch screen. I don't know if you can see that. Looks kind of funky. You know, it's got good, very clear, large numbers. It does everything. I mean, there's really nothing that this radio doesn't do for an HD. So if you want to spend the money and you want to have all the bells and whistles, like I said, it's pretty rugged. It's almost, if you look at it, it's almost the same size, case size
70, right?
As the thing. And, you know, in my hand, you know, I don't have that huge of hands, but it's not very big.
It's pretty rugged.
So it's rugged. I mean, I would be worried about like tossing it with the touchscreen. It'll probably, you know, that's probably a little bit more delicate where I don't think you could probably break the screen on the FT70D,
because it's rock just the right way. I've done it before.
Yeah, I guess you could, but it's inlaid a little bit. So I mean, yeah, whatever. I've had no problems with these. They've always worked for me. You know, the biggest problem I have is when I need them, I always forget to charge them or have them charged.
Isn't that the problem with all the HTs? Is like we have a bunch in our arsenals, and what do we always go to?
Always
we go
carry to spare batteries. Fest,
what do we forget? The HT.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, true. That's the other thing.
I want to build a. I have batteries for everything, right? My RC planes, ham radio, HTs, you name it. There's batteries there. I really want to somehow design a battery charging station for all my stuff. Like seriously, I want like a table where I got my RC batteries going, my HT batteries going. I want it solar, so I'm not wasting my electricity keeping the stuff charged. I mean, I always think about it, and one day I'm going to design one and just have it all done where I'm just going to have everything in one place. Phones, iPads, you know, what else you got to get charged? Now I'm charging Ring camera batteries, right? It's just everything.
No, go.
Well, I'll throw mine. Do you have a question, Paul, at all? You want to throw it in there, or are you good? Okay. All right, cool. Well, I guess I'd throw my last one, and this one, I'm sure a lot of the ICOM folks are just going to fall over in their chairs hearing this come out of my mouth. No, I'm just kidding. I'd go the ID52. Now, when I was bored and I had a lot of ridiculous extra cash, I was constantly just, you know, dabbling on many websites going, you know, maybe that ID52, that's, you know, I don't need it. I know I don't need it. I don't want, like, I really don't have a purpose or need for it. It's just kind of something fun to play with, you know, but I got to that point in my life and where I'm at. It's like, I had three HTs sitting on the, you know, my shelf already on the HT display that we all have in some form or fashion. And I just, you know, I'm like, I'm just gonna buy it. It's just gonna sit there, and I may take it out, you know, on a special occasion. But probably more than likely, I'm not gonna take it to field day because I'll beat the tar out of it, and I'll regret every moment that I cracked the screen on it, or I've, you know, left it in, you know, a bag or something. And so I would recommend that radio just because of the functionality, the features built into it. It's got a color display. It is very good in what it was built for and its intended purpose. And again, it follows ICOM. And this is the one thing I love about ICOM that I wish Yaesu would get out of their heads out of their asses and say, let's standardize our menu systems. I mean, you can get that on the HTs. You can get that on their HF gears. You can get that on their VHF, UHF gear. All of the menus are probably the same thing in terms of functionality. So you can hop into anything and, you know, just know what you need to do to be able to navigate through it. You know, and the 52, you know, definitely does that flawlessly. So that would be mine to kind of throw in the ring there.
And what does that one cost?
I won't even look it up. When I was looking at it, it was like about it was like just shy of 650. I think when the ICOM deals came out, it just brought it to like 599, but it's probably up there again.
Used on eBay, just under 500.
Cheap. Yep. Ooh. Yeah. I can only imagine what the abuse on that one's already been if it's off of eBay. Cool. All right. Well, so let's kind of put a pretty bow on this. So, if you're a technician and, you're going to get out there and you're going to obviously shop around for radios, again, it's really just about, like we said, it's your budget. And if your budget dictates, that you can only, out of the gate, start with something sub 100, there are a bunch of radios that we, rambled off on this, episode here. We invite you, feel free to email us at livefreeandham@gmail.com. We'll be glad to kind of help you, give you some direction. If you're still kind of like leaving this and, there's still a lot more questions than answers. So, feel free to do that. And we'd love to hear about your experiences and what radios you might have, picked up. We have a great Discord. And we'd love to have you hop on there and share your experiences too as well. But outside of that, any kind of last bit of advice you'd want to throw in the ring before we kind of close up shop here?
Especially, there's a lot of great resources in our Discord. Don't be shy about it. Just, ask the question, because there's no such thing as a dumb question. It's the question not asked.
I agree. How about you, Todd? Anything?
Yeah, I think if you're in a club and you participate in a club and you're at club meetings and you're talking with other club members, everyone's going to have a different view what they like. And like I said, just reach out to them and see what they think or their opinions are. And then, our club is pretty generous. We kind of swap things and let people try things out. So, maybe you can ask an Elmer, hey, or a club member, hey, do you mind if I borrow that HT for a week or something, just give it a shot.
Good idea.
And I don't think there's, if someone said, hey, can I borrow your HD? I wouldn't drop it. I'd be like, sure. Take it. Yep, I think it's and just have fun with it. Or, even go down to, if you're fortunate enough to have like an HRO or a place where you can go in or Gigaparts, just go down to the store and play around. That's the best part about going to HRO is I love now just sitting down at the radios and playing with all the different ones.
Have they asked if you want a job yet, Todd?
Yeah, I haven't been down there in a long time. I wasn't before where I was just about to just like have a direct deposit to them. It's been a while. I asked them, I said, so do you guys have like a thing like the direct deposit into an account? Like I could set up through my work.
Can I build a small little, trust.
Yeah, like 20, like $25 a pay period. And, you forget about it and you come like, oh, you got like 10 grand here. Sweet.
Yeah. There we go. HRO savings. I think we got to mention HRO then. We got to get that going. All right.
Yeah. Right.
I can only imagine what that would look like. All right. Well, with that, thank you again for paying attention. Thank you again for really listening to this show. As always, if you haven't subscribed, you can always connect with the show by leaving us a review on iTunes if you feel so led. You can also contact us on social media and catch the latest information, shows, and our content. You can also support our show because we definitely love those guys that are supporting us for using our Patreon and Buy Us a Beer links. They're all on our show notes and on our website, as every little bit helps us. And if you want to contact any of our hosts, including Ryan, who is not here, and I forgot to mention at the beginning, but I think we did, kind of touch on that one. You are missed, Ryan. We haven't booted you because you're Team Icon, because Paul still represents strongly here. There we go.
Hey, he
appears, It's Where's Waldo? He is still flying. All right. So with that, you can always contact any of our hosts on livefreeandham.com. And with that, 7-3.
7-3.
7-3, guys.